Blog Talk Radio.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place. Worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our humble bunker. Sam Teague Dachshund is snoring alongside, so he'll keep us on track.
Yes, and on time. We welcome you to this broadcast as we are live today on this Saturday, November the 22nd, the 51st anniversary of a very dark day in American history, the day in Dallas where President John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Yeah. You know, I remember I almost said the day the music died, but that song is actually about something else. But, you know, when it came out, American Pie came out, there was a theory that it may have actually been about that day instead of the day that the Big Bopper and
Richie Valens and Buddy Holly
all died in a plane crash. Yeah. No, there was a thought that it was actually about the assassination of JFK. And I would argue that that was actually the day that many Americans died as far as their faith in our country.
Yeah.
It scarred an entire generation.
And it's reverberated through American history to this day, 51 years later. There's a conference taking place now in Dallas, Texas. I've seen Dr. Jerome Corsi's been tweeting about that. Researchers like Jim Mars and Mary... I can't remember her last name at the moment, but she's one who's really been meticulous about collecting documents. But the fact that here 51 years later, people are still gathering to discuss and pore over new research being conducted into that event just indicates the effect that it had on the American psyche.
You know, what I find amazing is that we still see defenses of the lone gunman theory put forth by the Warren Commission, magic bullet, and how anybody can read that theory and not question it is just amazing to me.
No. Dr. Corsi's put out a new book. He released a book last year, which was a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, called Who Really Killed Kennedy? And sadly, I only had time to get partway through that, but he's put out an e-book, which I posted a link to at the PID Radio Cafe earlier today. It's very affordable. It's under $5, and it is a complement. It's an
adjunct.
Adjunct would be a good way to put it to the book that he published last year, in which he summarizes some new research that's come out. In fact, it's something that he intends to be almost a living book. If you buy the ebook, he will update it, and you can download the updates as he publishes them at no additional charge.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No one does that because generally when a book is updated, especially if it's more than, say, 5% or something of the total, it's considered a new book or a new edition. So that's amazing.
And some of the recent research that he included in this new book, which is called Who Killed John F. Kennedy, was from a conference that he attended in September of this year, so just a couple of months ago. And for someone like me who's had an interest in this case, but never really the time to read a lot of the books that have been published on this, and there have been a lot of books published on this topic, it's a good introduction to some of the newest research that blows away the official conclusions of the Warren Commission. But even the House Select Committee that researched this back in the early 90s rejected the Warren Commission's findings. But the most recent stuff, and one of the most damning pieces of evidence, I think, was some work done on some audio that was inadvertently recorded by one of the police officers in the motorcade who had a device called a dictabelt that was connected to Dallas radio, police radio frequency. And that audio was preserved. And so by synchronizing that audio with the Zapruder film, and then knowing the speed of sound and looking for certain clues in the Zapruder film, like deformation of the windshield of the car, knowing what point the bullet hit.
Yeah.
So the researchers were able to backtrack it, and they've identified through these audio clues that there were five shots fired, most probably from three separate locations: the Daltex building, the Texas Book Depository, which is, of course, where the Warren Commission concluded Oswald fired from, and then the Grassy Knoll, which is where the Dallas police converged immediately upon hearing the gunshots, mm-hmm. because they saw the smoke.
And yeah, exactly. And a lot of the people who were there at the time were pointing to that area.
Right. So recommend the checking it out, Dr. Jerome Corsi's book. Again, less than $5. It's a short read. It took me, you know, a couple of hours last night to read through it. And then now I'm going to go back and read the book from last year to dig through everything else. But even just reading through the little ebook this, you know, last night and this morning was enough to convince me that, and I was already pretty well convinced before, but now absolutely convinced that the Warren Commission was a cover-up. And the thing I appreciate about him is that he's not advancing his own pet theory about who was responsible for it, because defenders of the official story always have an easier time debunking alternate theories.
Exactly. All you have to do is just say, your theory doesn't hold water because mm-hmm. there's a problem with your theory. Mm-hmm. So what's your theory? I don't have one. I don't have a pet theory, but I'm telling you, yours can't be true.
Exactly.
Therefore, there is an alternate theory, and why aren't we trying to figure out what it should be?
Exactly. And all of the researchers into the JFK assassination, or to 9/11 for that matter, are necessarily dealing with evidence that's been deliberately spun and confused and obscured by those who are pushing the official story. Mm-hmm. And so they're all dealing with incomplete evidence.
Yeah.
So it's easier for those defending the official theory to poke holes in the alternate theories and say, well, see, this is completely wrong. You're nuts. And so is everyone else who questions the official story.
Well, I don't know. I may be nuts anyway. But you know what it reminds me of? Back in the day when you're taking the early math, and even in college math, algebra and geometry, very often you'll be told, show your work.
Yes.
Because the teacher wants to see, even if you got the answer wrong, were you trying to, was your method correct? Mm-hmm. And maybe just somewhere along the line you multiplied wrong or something. They have supposedly shown their work in the Warren Commission, and it's clear that their methodology is flawed.
Yes, absolutely. And Dr. Corsi shows places where witnesses who had a story to tell that didn't fit the narrative were not called, or that their conclusions were just left out of the report.
And there were a lot of people who suddenly died.
Suddenly died, yes. And he doesn't even go into that aspect of
it. Yeah.
Basically, what he does is he takes the smoking guns that show that the Warren Commission was wrong, sort of like the equivalent of the WTC-7.
Yes.
Of, you know, 9/11.
Yes.
I mean, regardless of all of these alternate theories
exactly.
that have been put forward about 9/11, like it wasn't really a plane, it was a missile that was fired, there were thermite charges, whatever. Forget all of that. Look at WTC-7 and the fact that that building, which wasn't touched by the planes and had barely been, you know, had just a minor fire inside of it, suddenly collapsed in on itself.
Pancaked.
Yeah. You know, explain that, because that cannot be explained by the two planes that hit the other two towers. And, you know, just that alone is enough to put the lie to the official 9/11 story. Similarly, the audio evidence that has been forensically reconstructed and synchronized with the Zapruder film just absolutely debunks the official story that one gunman firing a notoriously inaccurate rifle
had the time to fire off three shots that with precision,
yes,
and then run downstairs and be totally not even showing, like he just dashed down the stairs faster than any human could, standing in the break room and mm-hmm. be seen by a fellow worker looking like, oh, nothing was had going on.
Exactly.
You know, like I'm totally calm here. No, he mm-hmm. couldn't have done that. And also, you know, Dr. Corsi brings in the fact that there are several wallets uncovered.
Yeah,
he was leaving wallets all over town.
Right, he's going to go, he assassinated, allegedly, Dallas police officer J.E. Tippit, and then left his wallet there for investigators to find so they could pin the murder of Tippett on, mm-hmm. on Oswald as well.
But yeah, the wallet was found elsewhere before that.
Well, because he also had a wallet on him, and then there was a third wallet that turned up at the, you know, while he was somewhere. So there were multiple Oswald wallets, and again, the story just doesn't make any sense, but to his credit, he doesn't put forth a pet theory. He just says, here are the people that we knew had a motive, and there were certain people, one of which later went on to become president of the United States, who was in Dallas at the time. Actually, two of them.
Yes, two of them.
But he doesn't talk about Nixon.
A previous one, and then... Well, actually, he later became, two who would later become president.
Richard Nixon was in Dallas, and also George H.W. Bush was in Dallas that day.
And everybody was in Dallas that day. You know, like Sam T. Dodson's relatives may have been in Dallas that day, for all I know. It's really difficult to say.
We can neither confirm nor deny.
Did you see that he won the Royal 400
in
Indianapolis?
Yes. I did see that.
Yeah, he gets around.
Yeah.
What a guy. By the way, thank you for liking our Gilbert House Fellowship page, those of you who are friends of ours at Facebook. It's been a delight to do that every Sunday morning, or almost every Sunday morning, and we look forward to doing that again tomorrow morning.
That's right. So we'll be here again tomorrow morning at 10:30 Central Time, UTC-6.
If you don't know where it is, just follow our wallets. We'll just be dropping them along the way.
We'll begin Job chapter 11 tomorrow as we continue our study. So there are a lot of dark things going on in the world.
Well, and which is one of the reasons that we decided to relaunch a website that sort of kicked off everything we were doing. It was a website called peeringintodarkness.com, and we used to post a lot of things there. It was sort of the home of our early podcast, and which is what PID stands for, in case you're brand new to us, Peering Into Darkness. And it's about how we look at things from a biblical worldview, but we look at the darkness that goes on in the world. And honestly, there is so much of it. There's way more darkness. And I think that's one of the reasons I like the ending of True Detective. I won't give it away, but I'll just say that there's a reference to the discussion that I just gave. The commentary. Brain not quite, I'm not feeling that great today, so if I sound like my brain is not totally engaged, it's because it's not.
Well, let's just touch on True Detective for a minute, because it's a show that I had heard some discussion about during the season. It's an HBO series that starred Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
And is set in Louisiana, where detectives begin investigating a ritual murder, and the rabbit hole leads into some very dark and unexpected places.
Well, it's based on a true event, true series of events. They have masked it in a way that it's not obvious right away, but it is based on the Hosanna Church cult, I guess you would call it, because it certainly isn't a church as far as I know.
Right. And we talked about that at the time that it was happening, and this was several years ago. It kind of came back to public attention after the series True Detective took off and really became popular. I was hearing there's a sports talk station that I listen to quite a bit in Chicago. Are out of Chicago while I'm driving around Southern Illinois. And they would take entire segments, 20 minutes, 30 minutes at a time, which is a lot of time in a major market radio station to spend on a single topic, because the audience turns over very quickly, especially during drive time. And they were spending 20, 30 minutes at a stretch talking about the latest episode of True Detective. So we finally started watching it on HBO. And it is very dark. And because it's a cable series, be advised that there is language, there is some nudity, some depictions of sexual content that would not be appropriate for...
No, but I have to say, even though I'm not crazy about watching or listening to that sort of content, it is done in a way that you almost have to show it in order to make the point about how depraved this area is, and how the detectives are really in no way perfect on the inside.
That's
because
right.
You're taking a look at their dark interior as well.
Mm-hmm. And seeing they're working out their own demons in a sense through this case.
You know what? That's exactly, in many ways, the case is simply the catalyst for the two of them working through their own individual demons. Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Right. And Yeah, we don't want to spoil it if you haven't watched it. We would recommend it, but not recommend it for family viewing, certainly.
Please don't. And by the way, in case you're thinking, well, I don't have HBO, neither did we. We don't have cable television at all, but we do have an Amazon Prime subscription. And the reason we have that is so we can watch Amazon streaming and get all sorts of goodies there and also get lots of things shipped to us for free.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I love. I use Amazon all the time. You can access many of the HBO programs on the with Amazon Prime. You do have to pay for the episodes, but honestly, it's so much cheaper than paying for cable.
Yeah.
I mean, one season of this show is going to cost you about 10% of what our monthly cable bill was.
Yes, exactly. And you get to pick and choose what you want to watch, and you don't have to. One of the things that was really wonderful here in Illinois as we approached the election in early November was that because we didn't have cable, we didn't have to watch the political ads.
Yeah.
Which, when I did run into them, when I was visiting customers, some of them were just so over the top. Even the Republicans, whom we would be sympathetic toward, not supporters of, but at least more sympathetic to their positions, were way over the top in the ad. So that was really, really nice. And that was,
imagine a politician doing that. Oh. Well, speaking of that, we may as well get this out of the way. The other night, we did watch President Obama make his speech about how he has signed an executive order essentially giving amnesty to 5 million illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. And now if they can apply to be legal. I posted that we had just wasted 13 minutes of our time watching that. And it had nothing to do with the immigration problem. Nothing to do with that. It was the fact that his presentation was so lackluster and full of inaccuracies.
Yeah, I found an article that was just an op-ed piece at the Washington Post posted with the under the title "Questions for the Lawless President," and I stumbled on this because, as you know, we mentioned Amazon here a moment ago. Sharon has a new Kindle Fire HDX now.
My Christmas present.
Yes, and I've had one since last Christmas, which was my Christmas present. And as you may know that Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, the founder of Amazon, purchased the Washington Post this year.
Which is why you get a six-month subscription free. Yeah.
Right. They just launched the Washington Post app for the Kindle, which I've got to say is actually pretty nice.
It's very nice. I looked at it last night.
Yeah. But as Sharon pointed out, the presentation of President Obama included a number of inaccuracies. For example, he said, "All we're saying is we're not going to deport you," referring to people that he wants to, you know, enable to come out of the shadows. But the fact is, his plan would make those covered eligible for work permits, allowing them to be employed. And this is, by the way, a quote from President Obama: "Make those covered eligible for work permits, allowing them to be employed in the country legally and compete with citizens and legal residents for better paying jobs." Could have explained that to us during the, a little more in depth. Like, wait a minute. I thought the whole thing was that they were here doing jobs Americans didn't want to do.
Yeah. That's what you keep hearing.
Right. He had said repeatedly that he did not have the power to do this, and now he does. So what's changed since before?
Yeah.
He didn't have the power to do it in 2011, but now in 2014 he does.
Well, he prefaced much of that by essentially smacking Congress for not getting anything done, as if they were children, and because the children weren't obedient and got it done, now, you know, Dad has to step in and take care of things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really the impression that I got. Again, this has nothing to do with our opinion on immigration. My opinion is that if I lived in Mexico, I've said this so many times on this show, if I lived in Mexico, I would want the very best for my children and my family.
Right.
I would try to get to a place that was safe and would provide a good education for my kids. I understand that.
Yeah.
I really do. But sadly, our immigration policy has been, at the border, has been non-existent. And the Border Patrol, which are tasked with protecting our country from, well, frankly, from gangs and militias and from non-Mexicans crossing into the border and other than Mexican, I guess,
right,
what
the
they're
OTMs,
called, OTMs.
Yeah.
They have been told again and again over the last few years, don't do this, don't shoot, just watch. They have to to account for every bullet. Some of them aren't given bullets at all.
Mm-hmm.
In the last few weeks, some of them have had to turn in their rifles and their shotguns because they're told that they're not efficient or they're not up to, you know, so there's something wrong with them, but they've not been given an alternative weapon.
Right. Yeah.
So these are gentlemen who, I think they usually take three weapons in with them, handgun, shotgun, a Maria rifle, but they're supposed to be proficient on all.
Mm-hmm.
If they have to account for every bullet they use, many of them do not go to the practice range because that uses a lot of bullets and they're only allowed so many a month.
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah, like Barney Fife, you know, just the one in his pocket, basically.
Well, that's kind of what they're being turned into, and that's not what they want to be.
No,
they
exactly
really
not.
Want to do a good job and protect our nation.
Right, and they're not being allowed to do that by design. They, and I think the clue to that here is this. And incidentally, I think what we have here is a president who is acting for a couple of reasons. One of the key questions of this article, by the way, was why didn't you? I mean, he's complaining that he had to do this because Congress wouldn't act. But during the first 2 years of his presidency, the Democrats had control of the House and the Senate.
Exactly. So
why didn't he do it then?
It could have been done then.
Right.
Yes, it could have been done.
So
then. In fact, it was supposed to have been done that first year.
Yes.
That was a campaign promise.
Right. And so it was closing Gitmo, which is still open.
and getting out of Afghanistan, which we're going to have boots on the ground there again.
And Iraq.
Yeah.
So, but his executive order bypassing Congress, which again is ironic because he said the reason he wanted to do it was to give a fair shake to people who want to come here and play by the rules, work hard, play by the rules, and mm-hmm. do better. And again, we get that. We understand that. I mean,
if that were genuinely what he wanted, then I don't think I'd have as much a problem with it, but
right.
I don't think that that's the real reason.
No, but here's the other thing, the other aspect of this story, because Congress doesn't want this responsibility because they understand that most of us Americans are not really happy about this. And in fact, I think this dissatisfaction with the immigration policy of the country, legal and the way it's being enforced,
mm-hmm.
is why the southern United States, which 50 years ago was solidly Democrat, is now solidly Republican.
Yeah.
They have flipped. And what we saw, and we talked about this in our last program, and I, you know, that was when I kept going on and on and on about the statistics. But I think it bears repeating. What we're seeing in America, the Balkanization of America, is the breakdown of our two main political parties along racial lines. You've got the Republicans who have become the party of the white people. Even liberal white people now are beginning to vote Republican in areas where they used to vote Democrat generationally. You know, people would self-identify with a religious denomination and a political party. He's a Methodist and he's a Democrat. Well, now that has changed. And Democrats, looking at the demographics, saying, okay, yeah there are a lot more of people of brown skin who are coming into the country, but there's still a lot more white people. So we're going to need to let even more brown people in if we're going to maintain hang on to our phony baloney jobs. I think that's a lot of what just took place this past week, was a recognition that the political realities have changed.
Yeah. The irony there is I saw a story today, and I'm looking for it in my pocket, but I may have not have saved it. Apparently, there are now groups of African-Americans who are saying to President Obama mm-hmm. that they're not happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, because there is a tendency— and we're guilty of this not only in looking overseas and trying to make sense of the situation, political situation, the ethnic situation in the other side of the ocean, but even here in our own country, I think we sometimes draw with too broad a brush. And mm-hmm. there are some very strong tensions between the Latino community in the United States and the African American community.
Well,
and that may cause a further fracturing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's just typical of social groups. I mean, we all ultimately go into us versus them.
Yes,
okay, you're
yes.
not like me because
mm-hmm.
you have more money. You're not like me because you go to a different school. You're not like, well, I mean, come on, Purdue and IU.
Yeah, well, that makes
just,
sense. Yeah.
That makes perfect sense.
Or IU and KU, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, there are just certain
or
groups
UK.
That—
Yeah, KU's Kansas, UK's Kentucky.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like KU, but not UK.
Okay.
I'm my whole family's.
Yeah.
I've only got two or three IU fans in my family. The rest are UK fans.
But the other aspect of this that is worth noting is that the Republicans in Congress, who control now the House and the Senate, and the House, which constitutionally has the power of the purse strings, they could defund this executive order and prevent it from happening.
Yes, they probably won't, though.
They won't. In fact, even before the president issued his executive order, spokespersons for the for key Republicans in Congress were saying, well, it would be impossible to defund President Obama's executive order through a government spending bill. We cannot, literally cannot defund that agency in an appropriations bill because we don't appropriate, blah, 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 blah. They were already making excuses to, as to why, gee, our hands are tight. Wait, yeah. Wait a minute. The system is set up for, as a system of checks and balances. The president can't do this.
Yes. Let me just bring something up. There are rumors that Jeb Bush may run.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does, he's married to a Latino woman.
Right, right.
Now, I don't know how that's going to play with regard to what just happened, but my guess is that they will try to court, if he does run, they mm-hmm. will try to court the legal and illegal immigrant vote.
Sure, sure.
And I know, you're probably thinking, illegal immigrants have votes? Well, look, yes, they do.
Yeah. Hey, I'm from Chicago, where early vote often is actual exactly. advice from the Cook County clerk.
That's so. Why you're yeah. not supposed to, in many states, I've been told you can't ask for an ID.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, yeah. Okay. And you're right. And that's George P. Bush is the son of Jeb.
Yes.
And Jeb's wife, Columba, who is Latino. Jeb or George P. Yeah, he's got.
He's got the look. I mean, the word is that Jeb will actually run, but George P. will probably run for Senate or something very soon.
Yeah. Now, he was running for Texas Land Commission.
He's got the look.
Yeah. Did he win? He won his election in November.
Well, of course he did.
For Texas Land Commissioner. So his career is on the way. He's uh-huh. he's only 38, so he's got some seasoning yet. But watch yeah. for George P. Bush. And isn't it funny that here, 22 years down the line, from the first election of George H.W. Bush, followed by Bill Clinton, that we headed into 2016, and it looks like once again we are facing an election between a Clinton and a Bush.
Of course.
They're royalty. We in America have rejected a representative republic, and we have gone back to a nobility, a noble class, and us.
Well, there are those who joke about President Obama believing that yeah. he is emperor or king, and I've been guilty of saying things like that as well. But the truth is, I think George W. Bush thought he was the decider, and he got to decide, and it mm-hmm. would be much easier if it were a dictatorship.
Yeah.
The truth is that democracy in the true form of a democracy, it's a very difficult row to hoe because you're not very often going to get a country this large for, especially one that's now fractured so badly.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a majority on a lot of things.
No, no. If you get 55% of the electorate anymore, that's considered yeah. a pretty healthy.
But the fact is, we're not a democracy.
No.
We are technically a republic, which means that yeah. we elect representatives and they do the deciding.
Yeah, and the way it was set up originally, we would vote at the state level, and then our state representatives would vote in our senators.
And the president.
And they would, right, and they would vote for the president. And we've taken that out of, you know, we've
representative hands and put it into the hands of
right.
everybody. When I honestly think sometimes that it would be better if we went back to the old way.
I think
so, too. Because then you would know that the people... Well, you would hope that the people who were casting their ballots for these very important offices would be a little more informed.
Yeah. Sadly, no matter what system we put in place, the nature of us fallen humans, and it's not a condemnation of democracy or republicanism or anything else. It's just a condemnation of the human condition because we are fallen and sinful. There will be those who try to get in and manipulate the system and game it for their own benefit.
Yeah.
So, and this has been going on for years. Study a little history. You find out that the ancient Romans were pretty much complaining about the same thing. And then there were ancient Roman politicians doing the same thing that our guys are doing today. Hey, we'll promise you free bread and circuses if you'll support our platform.
Pretty much. Well, I'll tell you what, let's just skip right over Ferguson because that is, most people are probably thinking mm-hmm. they're going to talk about that because St. Louis isn't far from where they are. Their daughter lives in the St. Louis area. Let's just say that the announcement wasn't made and it's the...
Still waiting.
Still waiting. So even though there's lots of activity as far as the military
mm-hmm.
goes. Yep. There are tanks and helicopters and all sorts of people on the ground that are waiting to see what happens. But there's a story that you, you didn't uncover it, found it reported. And tell me about that.
Well, this was at the Daily Mail, and this...
If you can find an alternative place to read about this, I highly recommend it. I really hate going to the Daily Mail because it is turning into such a trash mag.
Yeah. The right-hand column has got,
What? If you just make your screen, the text huge, it pushes that right-hand column all the way out. So that's what I do.
Or here's another thing too. There's a plugin for the app Evernote, which is called Clearly.
Oh, that's right. And I keep forgetting to use it.
Yeah, Clearly. Clearly. And it will show up as a little button on the top bar of your browser. And Clearly is available for Chrome and for Firefox. Not crazy about Firefox anymore. They're starting to run ads in Firefox now.
I know. So, anyway, Firefox
Mozilla Foundation. Yeah, they're killing it. Anyway, there's a browser plugin for Chrome. And when you click on it, it basically takes the web page that's there and formats it in almost like a magazine article type style. Mm-hmm. And it eliminates all the stuff in the sidebars. So you don't have to see all of the pictures of Kim Kardashian's butt or whatever.
If I see that one more time, I am going to scream.
Yeah. Man, there's a problem with having your privacy hacked. I mean, she's complaining about it. Oh, I can't. Don't get your pictures taken without your clothes.
Okay? Exactly. Well, anyway.
So anyway, this story is something we haven't talked about much, and we've been missing this because really this is a big story in the UK. We have talked over past years, but not much recently, about America's equivalent to this story, the Franklin cover-up, the Franklin's credit union scandal, which took place during the administration of George H.W. Bush, and essentially a pedophile ring based out of Omaha, Nebraska, around the Franklin Credit Union, which reached all the way into the Bush White House, where a group of rent boys were essentially given a midnight tour of the White House by a guy who was later found suicided in a hotel room in Boston.
Yeah, it's a very disturbing. Yes. It's connected to the, the boys' home there in Omaha.
Boys Town,
yes.
Yes. Well, the UK has its own version of this, and this is the type of story that pops up periodically. Dave McGowan, who years ago wrote a book called Programmed to Kill, and I interviewed him in 2006 back in Columbia. Haven't had him back on for A View from the Bunker, and it's overdue.
If he's still writing, you need to get him back.
Dave McGowan's book, was about the politics of serial murder and some of the strange links between the higher profile serial murder and spree murder cases in the United States and certain political agendas. It's the same type of work that Peter Lavenda was doing. Maybe not quite as much of a look at the occult, but the first few chapters deal with what he called the pedophocracy. And that's an excellent term because...
It's an unfortunate term, but I'm afraid it's apt.
It is apt because these cases, when they come to light, as in the case going back to the Hosanna Church, to an extent, McGowan talked about certain cases like the Marc Dutroux case in Belgium in particular.
Yes. Yeah,
Dutroux was the most notorious serial murder, if I understand correctly, ever prosecuted in Belgium. And he's back in the news, by the way.
Yeah.
Teenage girls are wanting to become his pen pal. Yeah. And this is a guy who was convicted for murdering and imprisoning and raping young girls. The problem with Dutroux,
Charlie Manson just got married.
Yeah, to a 20-something.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dutroux was allowed to continue his activities for quite some time because he was politically well-connected, and the investigation revealed some things about nobility and the upper crust in Europe, in Belgium in particular. There was a reference to pink parties to which members of nobility and high society were invited, which were basically pedophile parties where children were brought in and shared around, similar to what was taking place around the Franklin Credit Union and similar to what is being reported by a reporter for the Daily Mail and the Independent in the UK named Guy Adams. He's been writing about this all year. And you can find the links at the Daily Mail's website. I'll put a link to this article, and then if you click on his name, it'll bring up the articles that he's written there all year, and there have been a number of them. There's a scandal, a pedophile ring scandal, scandal in
well,
the UK.
We pronounce it pedophile over here.
Yeah. But it is like the Franklin Credit Union scandal, reaching into, well, it reached right into, was it 10 Downing Street? Is that the Prime Minister's location?
Yes, it is.
During the Margaret Thatcher administration, her personal secretary was a part of this group. There was an organization, a group called the Pedophile Information Exchange, or PI, which operated out of the Home Office in during the 1980s. And essentially, a fellow who had a job there, which involved really doing nothing, sitting and watching an alarm panel. He was supposedly an employee of a security system, but essentially he was just placed there so he could serve as...
Now, where did he... Was he working?
In the Home Office.
Oh, whoa.
Which is what? That's like...
That's in Whitehall, I think.
Yeah.
That's like the State Department. Sort
okay.
of.
Yeah. And he served as a clearinghouse for these pedophiles to share information about where and when they could get together and have parties with their boys. There is a block of flats that were constructed in the 1930s in London along the Thames to house people who were connected with government, who wanted to live close in to the halls of power.
Yeah.
And called Dolphin Square. And Dolphin Square, according to this article, where boys were regularly taken for sex sessions in the 1970s and 1980s.
Sam's disgusted. He's leaving.
Yeah. I don't blame him. This is disturbing stuff. According to the article, the members of this ring were a cross-section of Britain's most powerful and influential politicians. A whistleblower named John Mann was quoted by Adams in the article as saying, "I had been specifically told we were dealing with conservative MPs. That's one of the things which stood out for me. Another was how violent it sounded. There was talk of dogs being involved and beatings. I would describe it as quite awful, the sort of thing you don't easily forget." According to the, the article, the whole place was rotten to the core. Whistleblower said he was leading a team of three or four employees looking into it. The scale of corruption was enormous. Quoting again, it involved criminal gangs. Two of our sources were drivers for Charlie Richardson. Now, Charlie Richardson was a rival gangster to the Cray twins.
Oh.
Back in the day. The Crays, if you've ever watched Monty Python, the series, and seen the episode about Doug and Dinsdale, what was the
name? Oh, I can't remember
anyway,
last name.
Yeah, Doug and Dinsdale, the Piranha twins.
Yes, that's
Doug
right.
and Dinsdale,
that's
Piranha.
Right. Instead of crayfish, a piranha.
Exactly. They were... they were modeled on the Cray twins. So anyway, so you've got this this ring of pedophiles operating with impunity. Some of this information coming to light in the late 1980s, and the whole thing being swept under the rug, and now finally only coming out about 30 years later after some of the most prominent members, one in particular named a politician named Cyril Smith, has died. At the same time, throughout the summer, we were seeing the stories about Jimmy Savile, who was a radio and television presenter in the
right.
UK. Who
And those stories only came out after he died.
Exactly. So, and the story about Savile, he was not connected to this ring in particular, but the stories that that came out about Savile was that the pedophile ring that he was involved with was being operated out of the BBC offices.
Yeah, exactly. So we talked about this actually when you and I were talking earlier today. I said, I think we discussed this some years back. 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
There was a story at the Daily Mail written by a detective named Eileen Fairweather about a pedophile ring that she had tracked down. And I said, I thought it was on one of the Channel Islands. It was. It was actually on Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a home for boys there, sort of like Boys
That's
Town.
Right.
The Odela Garenne School. Apparently, these boys were used and abused, and she managed, and some were murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So she managed to track down a lot of the information through a constable who simply could not hold his tongue anymore. Detective Constable Peter Cook had finally despaired, the article said, and decided to blow the whistle to a reporter, and he called her. I'd looked at Amazon hoping that she had written a book about it, but I've not seen anything over there. So if anyone in the UK knows of a book that you would recommend that we read regarding this case about the Islington Children's Home, mm-hmm. I'd like to know more about it.
Yeah. And by the way, this article about the Dolphin Square is a new revelation. It does not really tie back to some of the older stories that Guy Adams had been writing earlier this year. He said this Dolphin Square child sex ring might have stayed a secret. The initial investigation was buried in 1988, but last Friday night, November the, what would that be, the 14th, Metropolitan Police in London issued a press release that they had received credible reports of a possible homicide connected to this ring 30 years ago. A young man named Nick, an alleged victim, came forward, spoke to the BBC, told them how he had been handed over to this pedophile ring by his own father, who himself was an active pedophile. He said that the group was very organized, included leading members of the judiciary, military, security services, along with politicians. They would hire chauffeurs to pick up victims and take them to sex parties or sessions. Again, a lot of these description sounds like what was going on with the Franklin Credit Union scandal.
Yeah, it does.
And he said that that this young man, Nick, not his real name, said that these sessions would descend from several hours of carousing into private time, which always ended with the young boys and girls being raped. And he claimed that at least three that he was aware of, three of the victims had been killed by members of this ring. And that's why the Metropolitan Police has reopened this case after, 25 years of being squashed. But again, the Franklin scandal, pretty much the same thing. There was a documentary that had been produced by a British production company, and it was supposed to air on Discovery here in the U.S., and Discovery quashed it at the last minute. You can still find it online. 4 years ago, I interviewed the author of a book called The Franklin Cover-Up, Nick Bryant. Also talked with William H. Kennedy about this scandal. Late William H. Kennedy. And I can link to those in the show notes. So if you want to go back and listen to those about the Franklin.
Missed.
Yes, because of his research into not just that case, but also to the Dutroux case and the pedophile priest scandal that afflicted the Roman Catholic Church.
Well, that's one of the reasons, as I mentioned earlier, that we've reopened the peeringintodarkness.com website. We're going to use this as a daily diary of the articles that we're finding. So if you go there and you have something you want to say, I'm trying really hard to make it such that you can give us feedback. I may put it in the comments section, but there was one article there today that I put an actual form that you can fill out and send us an email. Mm-hmm. So if you have, in other words, if you know of something going on in your neighborhood regarding that story, and the story was about decapitated animals that are being found. This happened to be, I think this was in the New York area, but I've seen stories on the East Coast, the West Coast, and in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And
Going back years.
And this animal
decades.
Mutilation, many of them are decapitations. There have been goats, chickens, dogs, and even squirrels who have been found decapitated. Mm-hmm. Some of them cats. Some cats have been not only decapitated, but bagged up. A few days ago, I saw a story where all these 20-some cats had been found bagged up and hanging after they'd been abused from various trees. This is more than just a serial killer in the making, and that's traditionally what we've been told from forensic television shows. No, this sounds like something else, like satanic ritual.
Yeah, and the nature of the story is so gruesome that they can be sensational when they're reported, but for some reason, and I'm not sure if it's because the reporters, the newspapers, news outlets, news media aren't focusing on these stories to bring them to our attention, or if we collectively forget because we don't want to face this darkness. We
I
don't
think that's
want
what
to be
it
reminded.
Is, which is why we call it peering into darkness. You can't stand to stare at it for long. You just have to sort of, you know how when you peer at something, you just sort of look from a distance. That's exactly what we're doing. We do that to try to tell you, you know, we're watchers on the wall, and we're trying to tell you, the church, and those who don't yet they haven't yet become members of the body of Christ, but maybe are thinking about it. We would like to tell you what it is that we see on the horizon as far as what the enemy's up to. And I'll tell you what, there's some dark stuff. You and I were talking this morning about I've had this feeling physically. I'm not feeling great today, but I also just kind of feel like there's this little spiritual, you know, darts that are just firing at me. Mm. And I'm not really sure why that is, unless it's because I've been looking at these kind of stories all week. It gets hard to do after a while.
Right. The work of people like Chris Putnam and Reverend Robert Bennett, who are, you know, going forward and presenting some credible, and we'll talk about a new story that, by the way, Chris brought to our attention, posting it at his website, The Supernatural Worldview, just recently. They're presenting some credible evidence that the supernatural realm exists. We as Christians accept that. We acknowledge that. But for those skeptics out there, it's like, look, there are scientists now out there who are conducting peer-reviewed research that are documenting that the spirit realm exists. And if you skeptics will acknowledge that, okay, if the spirit realm exists, then my presupposition that science, in air quotes, mm-hmm. is limited to what I can perceive with my limited human senses may not be all that there is out there.
Yeah.
And if you acknowledge the possibility of the spiritual realm, then you have to acknowledge the possibility that maybe this thing that I've been rejecting all along called the Bible may have some information in it that I need to deal with the spirit realm. And that has a lot to, to borrow a phrase from Mike Heiser, as I often do, explanatory power for events like what we're talking about tonight. You talked about the animal cases, and I stumbled on one that, and I have not been looking at this all week, just 2 days ago, two men down in Texas near Corpus Christi arrested in conjunction with a horse mutilation case in which they surgically removed the genitalia from a female horse, a mare, and left her to die. And she struggled on for about 6 weeks before they finally had to put her down. The care that she required, there was a horse rescue operation that took this horse in. They named her, gave her a name that was an Indian word meaning brave, Yanaha. The wound was so extensive that it required 6 hours a day to properly clean.
Oh my goodness.
What possible purpose would be served? But now maybe these guys were just trying to get...
You tell me that this is part of something called horse ripping?
Well, that's a term that's been applied to this as we were just doing some very brief research on this before the program. But this is in searching for this, turned up a startling and disturbing number of stories going back to, this is from the archives of the New York Times, from 1993 in the UK, Hampshire. Over the last 3 years, more than 30 horses have been savagely attacked. The attacks, which date back more than 10 years. So we're going back to the early 80s now. We're going back over 30 years. Horrific death of Barney. This is a story from 2012. Pony has eye gouged out and stomach slit open in another sadistic killing. So, yes, this has been going on for some time. Why the horses? Cattle mutilations, there are some explanations there that involve a possible government attempt to cover up the spread of mad cow disease, but that's another thing. But the horses, the cats, the squirrels, the dogs, what is going on out there? We've not put this thread together yet, but we want to try to figure this out, because if we can hold this up in front of the skeptics and say, can you come up with a rational explanation for this? Can you come up something? Because I'm sorry, I'm not buying that a lack of government programs or a hormone imbalance or chemical imbalance in the brain is responsible for all of these attacks scattered worldwide. There's
three letters,
more to it.
Sin.
Yeah. And
they don't want to admit that mankind is born sinful.
And under the influence, perhaps, of the principalities
exactly.
and powers and dominions and thrones
exactly.
and rulers of spiritual darkness.
Right? Exactly.
And that's the whole point of what we do.
Exactly, exactly. Gosh, why on earth? I know that sometimes there are, I'll just say, restorative or enhancement remedies and potions that require certain organs from animals.
I've not heard anything
like that. I can't think of anything that would require, because it sounded to me like it was male and female horses.
Well,
as you said, one was Barney?
Yeah, Barney, but he had his eyes removed and stomach slit open, so it wasn't like they were going after the genitalia, like the cattle mutilation thing.
That's just but crazy. With
the female, there's another, one of the articles, of course, and I thought this was interesting and also telling, that somebody posted an article saying that horse mutilation and satanic panic, a developing narrative. Basically already putting out the meme that, well, of course, crazy fundies out there are going to start saying this is satanic, but no, come on. It's just,
these kids are just bored.
Right. Or they're trying to get even with other ranchers with whom they have a grudge or something like that. And, move along, nothing to see here. And that's what relates back to the Hosanna Parish story, the Hosanna Church story from
the long way around.
In Louisiana, which probably inspired the plot of True Detective for the first season. Horrible things being done to children and to animals inside that church. And when police initially reported on the satanic aspects of it, it was reported, but then later it was left out of the official charges that were filed, and the charges were limited to the child abuse charges, which were significant enough to get convictions. But the paraphernalia, the occult symbolism found inside the church, all that was left out of the trial because apparently they didn't want to poison the well and get people. They didn't want to muddy the waters, I guess, when they went to trial. But
they wanted to win, and the fear was that the jury wouldn't quite buy that aspect of it, but they would buy the child abuse aspects. There's a documentary on the Hosanna Church scandal, the cover up, and it even includes some of the drawings that the children made when they were being interviewed.
Yeah.
These are drawings that no kid should ever make. And there's a reference to actually that in one of the episodes of True Detective, that drawing aspect, what kids will draw. And that was never really developed much. But Natalina is the one who suggested I watch that. It's over at vice.com, I think, is the website.
Yeah.
And so if you want to take a look for that, otherwise we'll put the link in the show notes if you want to watch that documentary.
Yeah, I'll make a note of that. Again, Hosanna Church in Ponchatoula, Louisiana. Yeah.
Also, there's a documentary that I just watched. If you're a documentary fan the way I am, and you're looking for something new to watch that is thought-provoking, it's called Dark Days. And I think it was at Netflix that I watched it. It was one of the recommendations for me, so I guess they figured me out. But it's about the homeless living underground in the Amtrak tunnels in New York City, I think. And it's just really thought-provoking. The bonding that took place between the various people who were living down there and how they look out for each other, with the exception of one person who clearly had a grudge. He burned down the home of one of the women who was living down there. They would find plywood and nails and anything that they could in the trash cans and the dumpsters, and they would build themselves little homes down there. And they were living among rats and just the worst possible sort of surroundings. But to them, it was their neighborhood. And that's, they saw themselves as living in a much better environment than people who were on the streets. And they had electricity. and cold water, which a few of them had little camp stoves kind of things that are burners that they would cook on. It's really, really an interesting video, a documentary. I'm so glad I watched it, because honestly, that's not a slice of culture that I'm familiar with. And I really wanted to learn a little bit more about people who are trying to make it living on the streets.
It was you described it as being very uplifting.
It was the end of the story. You're just like, so watch it. Dark Days.
Yeah. And True Detective, we won't give you the ending, but there is a very neat scene. It's very well written. And the ending
is uplifting too. It's wonderful. Yes. So, and it goes right into the things that we talk about. So, if you can just make it through the language and some of the scenes, fast forward, you can always use that, but there's a lot of content there. A lot of really good stuff.
There is. Well, we're getting close to the end here. And actually, as we're getting close to the end, we're actually approaching a time at which an interesting presentation is about to be given about 3 hours west of here at Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois.
I know. If we'd only known about it, we might actually have driven over there today.
Well, I don't know. You might actually have to be a rocket scientist to be a part of this group. It's the 2014 annual fall meeting of the American Physical Society. They're getting together at Monmouth College in Monmouth, Illinois. They were our arch rivals when I went to school at Knox.
We should go there.
Yeah.
You wear your Knox t-shirt.
Knox and Monmouth, that was always the big game. In fact, that's the longest running college football rivalry west of the Mississippi.
Wow.
Yeah, I think maybe third longest in the country. I'd have to check that out to make sure. But anyway, they fight over the bronze turkey every year, and the Fighting Scots of Monmouth are our arch rivals. Anyway,
we're really bad at football.
Actually, that's sad. Knox. Anyway, a gentleman named Dr. John Brandenburg, he is a plasma physicist, is presenting a talk on Mars. He is of the opinion, and in fact, I believe he's got a new book which is coming out. I'm going to try to get him on for an interview.
I think you should.
He believes that an ancient Martian civilization, and two Martian civilizations, actually, two groups of people, the Cydonians and the Utopians, and that, you know, of course, that's his term for them. It's probably not what they called themselves.
Probably,
but anyway, were massacred in a nuclear attack. And
probably
he,
Marva.
Yeah. Yes. A reference to the lost skeleton of cadaver there. And he believes, his theory is that ancient life on Mars was massacred in a nuclear attack, and that we on Earth perhaps should be concerned that whoever launched the nukes against Mars might do so here on Earth. He's first postulated this theory about 3 years ago when he suggested that the red color of Mars could have been due to naturally occurring thermonuclear explosion. But now he believes that perhaps these weren't naturally occurring, that they were the result of an attack from an outside force. The Martian surface is covered with a thin layer of radioactive substances, uranium, thorium, and radioactive potassium. And Dr. Brandenburg, yeah, atmospherium, a teaspoonful could generate all the power we need for a city. He was interviewed on Fox News about 3 years back, and he said that this pattern radiates from a particular hotspot on Mars, which he believes where the bombs fell. He is a PhD in theoretical plasma physics from University of California at Davis, so he's no dummy. He currently works at Orbital Technologies in Madison, Wisconsin, and he's published a number of books on this topic. His latest, called Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre, which is actually forthcoming. Looks like it'll be out in February of next year. So we'll definitely try to get a hold of him, Dr. John Brandenburg, and I'll put a link to this because he's got a little chart here showing where he thinks the bombs fell, and he takes the face on Mars as evidence of a past civilization there.
He has a book there now called Life and Death on Mars, The New Mars Synthesis, that came out in 2013.
Okay. So, yeah, and sadly, because Monmouth, as I said, is about 3 hours west of us on the opposite side of Illinois, and because the Illinois River's in the way, which makes it impossible to get there straight from here, we'd have to go and then come back, and it would just, yeah, we'll just have to pass
on
that.
Lap ourselves. We can't do that.
Try to get him in for an interview to speak directly. But it is interesting that he appears to have a little more, shall we say, scientific credibility than Richard Hoagland.
Richard Hoagland is probably ready to call in now. We do want to thank you, by the way. We're getting close to the end. And even though you saw that we put this in for 90 minutes, we don't talk that long. You know, they're funny at Blog Talk Radio. If you put in 60 minutes and you go to 59, they will. They'll cut you off. So we put in 90. That fixes them.
Yeah.
But we don't want to go much longer than the 60 we generally do, because who can listen to us for more than 60 minutes? I mean, come on.
Not even Sam.
No.
That's why he's leaving.
In fact, he's leaving the room. He's saying you guys are done. But we want to thank you for joining us in the chat room today and for helping to like the Gilbert House Fellowship page. Please join us tomorrow morning as we discuss Job, 10:30 Central Time here at Blog Talk Radio.
And join us at Facebook and the PID Radio Cafe. Sharon has a busy schedule of interviews coming up in the days and weeks ahead as she continues to talk about her new book.
I do. In fact, I'm talking to Natalina on Monday.
Well, awesome. That should be a wonderful discussion.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And of course, you can, the book, by the way, is now officially available Ebola and the Fourth Horseman of the Apocalypse. You'll find it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and other fine retailers. I guess that's our cue.
Sam says that's it.
Time to go. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.